What is up, guys? It is JD and Lauren back with another Believe in TCU Football, where we're going to be recapping the TCU loss against Kansas State last Saturday in Manhattan, Kansas. And we have some other news that we got to touch on as well, some head coaching changes here at TCU. So we got a lot of stuff to dive into, so let's just get right into it. Starting out with this loss against Kansas State, JD, what were you thinking during that game? It was a pretty bad loss.
Yeah, man, it was a bad loss. I'm not really sure where it fell off the hinges, but it definitely fell off the hinges early on, I think. To see, Max pretty much get taken out of the game. I don't know, if that was injury concern or whether they were just kind of experimenting, not really sure. From that move to the scuffle after one of the plays, like it was so many things that just did not look very TCU like. Yeah. So it's definitely a tough loss. And I mean, now if you win, you kind of sweep that stuff under the rug, but to come out with a loss against a Kansas State team who is a good team. We did say that before, they are a good team. We got to give credit where credit is due, but I definitely think we could have competed a little bit better that day. Not the greatest day for the Frogs, but just a day that we got to get through.
Yeah. And, you said something about how it just didn't look like TCU, and it really didn't. And I know that we've had a tough season, and we've talked about that on every episode, and we know that, the fans know that, the team knows that, Coach P knows that, but I saw something that if it wasn't for that fourth quarter touchdown, this would have been our lowest scoring game since 1993, which is insane.
Wow.
The final score was obviously 12-31.
Yeah.
But without that final, without that late in the game touchdown, we would have had 5 points.
Yeah.
5 points.
5 points. Yeah. That's off the charts.
Yeah.
That's off the charts for sure. 5 points. Wow.
Which, the safety was pretty cool, I'm not going to lie. But 5 points. Insane. I don't know. That's not TCU. And this entire season, I think we've had some really good luck, I guess you could say, not even luck, just experience when it comes to the red zone. And
yep,
we just did not see that this game at all. It said that, I read an article that said that we went scoreless in the red zone for the first time this season. And they're normally really good. We normally score at least something, whether it's 3 points or six, something in the red zone. And there were multiple times that we got there and just didn't get anything.
Yeah, I mean, and you look at, and we talk about this every week, but you look at an offense like TCU, and you kind of scratch your head, because if we're getting inside the 25, we have the guys to score. We have them all over the field. You just cannot for the life, at least for me, I cannot understand, what is it that trips us up once we get into the red zone? We have a good kicker, and we could settle for three. That's fine. But field goals don't win games, touchdowns do. And so, like I said, man, you just kind of scratch your head when you get into the red zone and you cannot come up with a score, especially with the talent that we have on the offense side of the ball. So, like I said, I'm not really sure what's going on, what's happening on the offense side of the ball. But, I think they got to figure something out, because we don't have very many games left. And
no,
we got
Baylor,
a bowl game.
Baylor does not mess around this season, man.
No, they are on fire right now.
Yeah. No, I read something that said that TCU got to inside the 5-yard line, inside Kansas State's 5-yard line, three times in the first half, and we came away with 3 points in all of those three times in the first half.
Yeah.
We came away with only 3 points, which is just very unlike TCU.
Right.
I'm not really sure what was going on this weekend. You know, I know we had Zach Evans out. I know that, you know, I'm not sure where Duggan is on his injury. And like you said earlier, if that was the reason that he got pulled or if we were just experimenting or what. But, you know, even just going into numbers, I guess, Max Duggan was 9 for 13 for 73 yards before getting benched in the third quarter. Chandler Morris saw some playing time for the first time since Duquesne, our first game of the season. He was 9 of 14 for 111 yards in the second half, which just isn't exact. You know, it's not terrible, but it's not what you would expect. Especially, you know, fans have wanted Chandler Morris for a while. They've been asking for him all season. You know, just because, I mean, we've talked about multiple times, Lincoln Riley is just a quarterback machine. And, you know, he saw something in Chandler Morris, so we kind of figured that he would be the same here, but, you know, he didn't do terrible, but it just didn't really live up to, I think, the expectations that the fans were kind of expecting.
Yeah, man. I mean, he is on top of that, he's a local kid, Highland Park, right? And so, he's a Texas kid. He's a local kid. And I mean, for Lincoln Riley to see something in this kid, I mean, it's got to be something there, right? And that situation is kind of tough, because, I'm just looking at this from the inside out, being a former player. Like, although you do come into a program with skills and abilities, that player has to be able to adapt to that system, and that system has to be it has to be, what's the word I want to use? It has to be able to consume that player, if that makes sense. Because I mean, I transferred to TCU, so me coming into a new brand new system, not only did I have to adapt to the system, but the coaching staff, the plays that were called, not that I made the difference on whether a certain play was called or not, but offensive coordinators make play or call plays based on who's in the game. So it's like, I know we've been, or TCU fans have been, cheering for Morris. But like I said, the situation has to be right, with Max being a 3-year starter now, like, you got to do your due diligence there, and you got to give him the opportunity because he's earned it. Compared to a freshman who's coming in, he's new, new to the college ball. And so a lot of people say, well, he got to wait his turn, he got to wait his turn. But we clearly see that's not the case in Norman. Where any freshman can play, and that's their system, right? So, I'm just interested to see systematically what they're gonna do as far as this dual QB thing goes, because I mean, Chandler Moore showed that he could play. He showed that he can play. He's not afraid of it. But you also have your experienced leader in Max Duggan. So, I think the rest of the season is gonna be interesting to see what. Which direction they go in, do we continue to go with Max, or do we let them, rest up?
Well, I think it was interesting too because, at least for the rest of the season, Matthew Downing was our second string. So I was shocked to see Chandler Morris go in,
Yes, most
to be
definitely.
honest with you. So I don't know if that was just something. And I know a few weeks ago when Max Duggan was questionable, Coach P was saying how, you know, Downing was just fine in practice. That was his word, was fine, which I feel like isn't the best word, but.
Right, right, right.
But you know, I don't know if this was like an experimental thing or if it's something that they're going to keep going with. But yeah, I think it would definitely be interesting to see, especially if Duggan isn't up to his full potential right now, because I don't think playing on a broken foot can be easy at all.
No, not at all, man. Not at
But
all.
I did want to ask you, just because you brought it up, you know, being a transfer, I guess what is that kind of like? You know, coming into a new team, to different. I don't want to say morals, but you know, different experiences, different ways of doing things, and you know, for you, it was a different conference also. How was that?
Oh man, it was quite the experience. Coming from SEC land, where everybody is like gladiators, and it's the last man standing wins.
They're a
If I
different
had to
breed
kind
over
of,
there, man.
yeah, different breed. And then coming to the Big 12, where everybody is a track star, and nobody gets tired. So it's like, for me, it was most. I want to be in a electric offense, and at the time, TCU was just coming off of that great year with Josh Doctson and Trayvon Boykins, and so I wanted to be in that type of offense to show my abilities and what I can do on the perimeter. But also, I had to adapt to a faster system. I had to adapt to a no huddle system. I had to adapt to an up tempo system. So, you know, coming in, I think I weighed about 215, 220 as a receiver coming into TCU. And I dropped that weight pretty quickly for as much running that we did and the style of play that we played at. And so for me, it was definitely a challenge. And it took me some time. Like, I didn't just come in and hit it off right away. It took me some time to get adjusted to that and get acclimated to that system. But, you know, I'm thankful that I had 2 years to do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I kind of won that situation compared to when a guy has 1 year and he's got to try to figure it all out that year. And it's his last year or something like that. But for me, having 2 years, getting into that system, you know, it was a challenge. I can't lie. It was a challenge. But I figured it out. I figured it out. And I'm grateful. I'm grateful for the opportunity at TCU.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I can't even imagine. I feel like it's crazy coming into a new program, a new conference, you know, new plays, new people, new coaches. So, but yeah, that's awesome. I'm glad that it like worked out well for you and everything. And yeah, I'm glad that definitely Chandler Morris got to see some playing time. And, you know, I know he, our coaches and, you know, our program were pretty excited about him this year. And it was kind of a hassle to get him in the offseason.
Yeah.
But he's here now. Right. So yeah, I was definitely excited to see him out there. You know, and I kind of wanted to talk about, I'm going to butcher this guy's name. So if you know it, do you know who I'm talking about?
No, I don't.
That's okay. Okay. I'm going to try to say it. Kansas State's Felix Anudike Uzomah?
Go for it. That's what we're going with.
That's what we're going with. Okay, it's that.
Yeah, that's what we're going with. You did it.
He had technically 6 sacks this game, but it was decided 2 hours after the game that 2 didn't count, so he had 4.
Okay.
Which was – that was tough for us. You know, that was a new record, first off. That was crazy. But, you know, that's a huge game changer right there for us, you know? And that's, I feel like that's, again, that's just so unlike TCU. And I just wanted to bring it up because I feel like that's kind of the theme in this episode today. It's just, this wasn't TCU and it wasn't the Frogs that we're used to seeing. So, yeah, I don't know. What were your thoughts of that?
I mean, hats off to Felix for having probably the game of his life.
You didn't want to say his last name?
No, I'm not going to try. I'm not going to try. Shout out to Felix. Felix, you know who you are. I mean, phenomenal job on his effort to have the game that he had. But, you know, flipping the script here, you know, we can't get passes off if we got one guy sacking our quarterback 6 times or you know, however many sacks he had. You just can't, it just can't work that way. It just won't work, you know? And so I think later on in the game, we kind of found a way to neutralize him a little or at least slow him down, if anything, but you just can't have that, you know? And, you know, I'm not really sure what the miscommunication was up front with the offensive line. I don't know, you know, what's going on there, but when one guy is causing havoc, you got to put more hats on him or you got to put more bodies in front of him because, you know, if he's going to win one-on-one every other play, then we're going to have a long game ahead of us as we saw on Saturday. So, you know, like I said, hats off to Felix, but from a TCU standpoint, like, we got to find a way to slow that guy down. We have to.
Yeah. No, I know. And I know we've had some issues with our O-line this season, not so much with coverage as much, but definitely penalties and flags. And, you know, I think that's just another thing that we kind of got to figure out. And you know, like you always say, it's not just one thing. It's, you know, small little things that we just got to fix. But I just, overall, there was just a lot of little pieces that just weren't really fitting together on Saturday. And I really hope that we can figure them out before Baylor, because that is a huge game, especially this year, ranked. They're ranked. And, you know, it's always a big game for us. They're, in my opinion, probably our biggest rival. Because, I mean, SMU is a good rival, but they're not in our conference. So that's just my opinion. But,
I agree.
but, you know, there's just some things that we definitely got to work out for this weekend. Defense being one of them again.
Yep. Most definitely.
You know, and our defense did pretty good on the early downs. But they gave up some big plays on third and long, something that, you know, you wouldn't expect to be happening when you're playing so well on the first two downs and then you get to third and long and you're giving up first downs. That's just not something that you want to be doing at all.
Yeah, man. I mean, third downs, you know, for all the football fans, like third down is the most important down because that's going to determine a lot. It's going to determine a lot of the game, you know, how often does an offense convert on third down? And so, you know, our defense has definitely had their spells this year, no doubt about it. But, you know, like you said, they played very well on early downs, which is something that we didn't see early in the season. So
yeah,
they're showing progression, which is what I'm excited about. They're showing progression and being able to figure it out early on. And, you know, those third and longs, man, those are those explosive plays that I mentioned, you know, a couple of shows ago about how that can change a game, that can steal momentum, that could win you a game, explosive plays. And so, yeah, I mean, Kansas had a lot of them, unfortunately, but you know, it's one thing to get pushed back and let their offense drive down the field. But this week, our defense fought. They fought early. Still got some young guys back there. Still got to figure some things out. But, you know, I'm proud of the way that they fought and got better. I'll say that they got better this week. They got better. So still got a lot to clean up against these before we face these Baylor Bears. But you know, there's some promise ahead.
Well, yeah, and like you always say, you got to give credit where credit is due. So, you know, that safety was awesome. Thompson, you know, Kansas State's quarterback did throw a pick. So, you know, we got some good things going on for sure. But, yeah, you know, again, it's just those little mistakes that, you know, you just got to clean up and they'll be good to go, you know?
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. Got to give credit where credit is due. So,
Yeah,
6-year guy, like we said in the preview, I mean, he's not new to football. So I'm sure we were sure that he knows how to manage a game. And he definitely showed that.
He definitely showed that.
All good. It's all good.
All right. So we got to move on to the part that everybody probably wants to hear. Coach Patterson and TCU decided to, in quotes, mutually part ways. So effective immediately, Coach Patterson is not the head coach of TCU anymore. And Coach Kill is going to be filling in for him for the time being. You know, I texted you on Sunday when I found out about it. The news broke pretty late, on Sunday. But what were your initial thoughts?
I almost, this is going to sound crazy, but Sunday was Halloween. And so I almost thought it was a joke.
you thought I was joking with you?
Yeah. Well, before you text me, somebody sent it to me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, somebody sent it to me. And I just thought like, oh, there's somebody making like some weird like Halloween article or whatever. And then you text me like 5 minutes later and I was like, oh, no, this is real. This is the real thing. And then obviously the texts and calls and stuff started flooding in after that. But I mean, I'm shocked, number one, because, I mean, GP has been there for the majority of my lifetime, 22 years he's been at TCU. And so he's been there for quite some time.
Older than me.
Yeah, there we go. So, you know, his tenure has been there is very, very, very long. And so it is very surprising to read and learn that they, you know, mutually parted ways. I like the way you put it that way. They mutually agreed. Because, you know, you got people out here saying, oh, GP just turned his back on TCU, or TCU just straight up fired GP. And, you know, everybody has their way of interpreting the news. But I think, you know, the best way that it is put, just because of the program that TCU is, that, you know, there was a mutual agreement, you know, and we hate to see him go. I appreciate him for the opportunity he gave to me to come on board and be a part of that program and that system, where I learned a lot. I experienced a lot. I had some of the plays of my life in a TCU uniform, and it wouldn't have been capable without, you know, Coach Patterson. And so I'm thankful for him. I know that he is an acquired taste for some people, but for me personally, I respect the man and his craft, and, you know, that he takes his job as seriously as he does. Like, no coach stays at a school that long without having some kind of plan and structure and system of the way that things work and go. So, you know, I hate to see him go, but, you know, as we mentioned early on in this season, that college football is turning into a business, you know, and unfortunately you have to see things like this. So it's pretty wild to see.
Yeah, no, I was shocked too. And it really is. I was looking through Twitter like the night that I found out, and a lot of people just kept saying, and I think it was put perfectly, it really is the end of an era. You know, he brought this program from absolutely nothing to something. You know, and even though this year wasn't exactly what we expected, you know, we have so much to thank him for. And, you know, even you were saying, you know, he gave you, you know, great opportunities, and same with me. I think I've said this before on the show that, you know, he was the one who put me in contact with TCU football and, you know, got me my internship with them, which, you know, I have him and nobody else to thank for that. And if it wasn't for that internship, I wouldn't, you know, have all these other great opportunities and stuff. So, you know, I really want to just, it really does just come down to him. He gave me my first opportunity, and that just opened the door to so many other things. And I think he's been that way for so many people too. So yeah, he's definitely going to be missed. And, you know, I think he's just a great person. His morals are great. And, you know, I know we've talked about before how he always talks about it's about the 40, not the four, you know, the 40 years after college, not just the four that you're in. And so yeah, no, he's definitely going to be missed.
Yeah, most definitely. And I want to touch on that 40, not four quote or phrase that he uses. Well, side note, whatever he's about to go do, I know he's about to have fun and enjoy it. I hate that when people talk about it, it sounds like a death or a funeral or something. although it kind of has that type of feel, like that real sadness feel, but I know he's about to go enjoy himself, man. But anyway,
focus on his music or something.
Yeah, I'm telling y'all, he's about to pop as a like country music star. It's about to happen. He's gonna move to Nashville.
Good stuff.
He does, though. He does.
He's really good stuff.
He can carry a tune, and he can play. Like, he can play the guitar pretty well. So yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him in Nashville, like, having concerts and stuff, man. Like, just give me my credit when it happens.
Yeah.
But 40 not. Oh, yeah, yeah. I knew him before then. The GP, not Gary Patterson. I know GP. But anyway, 40 not 4. I think that's very, very important to the mental framework of an athlete, because you do have 4 years to give it all you got, enjoy yourself, and get an education all at the same time. And to hear that phrase for the first time, you know, it didn't hit me, and, you know, because I'm new. I don't really know a lot about this place, this school, this system. Like, oh, that's a cool phrase. But it wasn't until I've been out of school now for 4 years that I think about it like, oh, that's what that means. 40 not 4. And so, you know, regardless on the opinion that people have about GP, like, the man shows why he is as successful as he is. It doesn't mean he's perfect, but nobody it does is. Mean that, yeah, no one is. No one is perfect. Everybody has their flaws of whatnot. But, you know, he truly believes in excellence, and I think that's something that you have to carry on the within your next 40, your 40 years, not just four. Because, you know, at the time, you know, we're young kids out of high school on our own for the first time, and we're just enjoying life. Like, we got freedom to do whatever, right? But as you grow out of that phase and you get into real life and you actually do turn 40, you realize the importance of excellence. You realize the importance of discipline. You realize the importance of communication and trust and loyalty and all these different things, all these different words that truly do make a difference in whether you're successful in life or not. So I appreciate him for, you know, being an example of that in the ways that he did. And you know, he's human at the end of the day, so he's gonna make mistakes too. Nobody's perfect. So but yeah, I love that phrase 40, not four.
Yeah, and you know, I kind of like to relate the two. I saw you know, in a press conference with athletic director Jeremiah Donati, he said, in quotes, "We all, Gary included, felt this was going to be a bounce back year. Mid-October, it became apparent that we wouldn't meet those expectations," end quotes. And you know, this probably isn't, I don't know if this is true. I haven't seen it in an article, so I don't know if it's fact, but in my opinion, that just sounds like not him turning his back on TCU. That's him wanting this program to succeed so much, because that's all he ever wants. It's like this program to succeed. And, you know, I think he, and I guess TCU might have just felt that, you know, a change might help make that happen.
Yeah. I agree with you. I agree with you. Like, it wasn't GP turning his back on TCU.
Yeah, no.
Was, you know, from what I read in an article, whether it's true or not, you know, he was offered to take another role next season and he declined it. He politely declined it. And I told somebody earlier this morning, like, how do you expect him to do that? That's like, and I made the joke, like, that's like asking the principal of your school in 2021 to come back and be a teacher in 2022. You know, you know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't, that just doesn't line up, especially for all he's done in that position. So the whole October thing, I think that's when bowl game plans are made. If I'm not mistaken, because bowl games are typically, you know, end of November, early December-ish, you know, going into the New Year's and all of that. So I think that's when those plans have to be made about where we may potentially be going, travel arrangements and this, that, and that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, by this time now, teams are getting bowl eligible. You know, six wins makes you bowl eligible, whether you get the bowl or not. And I just think that, you know, looking at the back end of our schedule, I just think that, you know, the people that make the calls in the big office just don't necessarily, I won't necessarily say they don't have faith that TCU can pull out six wins, but it makes it hard to believe that they do. Mm-hmm. Because you fire your head man. Now, you know, yes, we have Baylor, we got Oklahoma State and Iowa State coming up. Those are definitely really, really, really good teams. Don't get me wrong, but you know, I feel like you gotta fight it to the finish. I don't like to, I don't like the mid-season moves like that. That sucks, man. It really does.
Yeah. No, I was thinking the same thing, and it's definitely not what we wanted, needed, or expected going into Baylor Week. You know, going into, and we talked about last show that, you know, we have a back season that's pretty heavy and pretty tough, and you know, we don't need to be like working on head coaching changes right now. Because we want to finish out strong, and that's, I feel like that's going to be a lot tougher now with all these changes. So I totally agree with what you say, with what you're saying.
Yeah, most definitely. And I mean, I have faith in Coach Keel to pick up the baton and continue to carry it. But you know, what I think that some people don't take into consideration is the ripple effect that has on fans, on students, on recruits that may be coming in next year, on the team morale, on the staff. Like, it's a ripple effect, you know, when you remove your biggest piece out of the game. And so like, I agree with you. Like, this is not the time to be trying to figure that out. You know, like, Baylor is 7-1. We need every body sold in a TCU shirt or jersey to be on, you know, on board.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I don't agree with it at all. I mean, we get to the end of the season and we got to reevaluate, then we do that. But I just think, you know, man, let's just finish it. I don't think that was a good way to end his long tenure.
No, I totally agree. I think it came at a very weird time. And I think it would have been a lot, if this was going to happen, it would have been a lot better to do in the offseason, for sure.
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely.
And, you know, you bring up, like, recruits, too, and it is a huge thing, because there are some recruits who, you know, will kind of want to go to a school for the coach specifically. You know, I knew somebody who was going to a school for, I mean, it was for baseball, you know, different sport, but, you know, after he signed, he found out that the coach was leaving for another school, and he left with him.
Hmm.
You know, which is just interesting. And not saying that would happen, but it's, you know, it's definitely very real. And you're right, it does have a big effect on not only the program, but the fans and the players and the recruits and everybody.
Oh yeah, most definitely. I mean, now I would definitely step out on a limb and say to any high school recruits or any parents listening to this show, I just encourage you guys to not pick a school for a coach. because coaching changes happen all the time.
Yeah, true.
They happen all the time, and I made that mistake myself of choosing a school based on a coach. So, you know, I would definitely advise that not to. But at the end of the day, that you're right. There are some recruits that are going to reconsider what was going on. I mean, or where they want to be, because, you know. And this could be for any school, not just TCU, but that coach that may have left may have had a system that was appealing to that recruit.
Yeah.
You know, or regardless, you know, or appealing to the recruit's family or et cetera, et cetera. Like, there's so many good things that come with the head coach, as well as, you know, some things that aren't so good too. But, you know, now you're going to have a lot of TCU recruits reconsidering whether this is the program to go to or not, because I'm not crazy. I know these kids are out here reading these articles. They're staying up late on Twitter, saying what these people are saying. And that is ultimately having an effect on their decision.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I guess, you know, I kind of want to move on to talk about, there's a lot of talk about who our new head coach is going to be. And obviously nothing is finalized, but there are a few names that have been thrown into the mix.
Okay.
Number one is SMU's Sonny Dykes is apparently the front runner.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Interesting. The rest of the people in the mix are Bill Napier from Louisiana, Jeff Traylor from UTSA, Jamie Chadwell from Coastal Carolina. There's a few more names that are thrown into the mix, but those seem to be the four main ones that I keep seeing. But specifically, Sonny Dykes is that front runner there, which I've been seeing on articles. And, you know, you never know if things are factual or not, but that is definitely the name that I've been seeing thrown into the mix the most.
Yeah, that is odd, man.
Yeah.
And what's funny about that, I haven't seen this list, but my dad just asked me about that recently.
Really?
Because I'm from Louisiana, and I was recruited by Coach Dykes when he's at La Tech.
And
so he asked me about that. My dad asked me about it. He's like, You think he'll take it? And I was like, well, I mean, right now he's 7-1 at SMU.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not too sure. You know what I mean? Like, I know he's had success at SMU, so I'm not exactly sure that he would take it. But Coach Dykes was on the staff my senior year at TCU, and so he's familiar with the system. He was there. He saw it all happen, and he was a great mentor for me. Specifically, just giving me, you know, wisdom along that journey, and just encouraging me to give it, you know, 1,000% in everything I got since it's pride and everything. But that would be interesting if he took that job. I can't lie, that would be interesting for sure.
Yeah, no, I think it would be interesting, and I kind of agree with you. I don't know what he would be thinking, since SMU is doing so well this season, but I know there are some conference changes going on over there. I wonder if that'll sway his decision at all. So, but yeah, I definitely thought that was quite interesting.
Yeah, most definitely. Oh, I forgot all about the conference changes. Yeah, you got a
Yeah.
point there. You got a point there. We might be in for a treat then.
Yeah, for real. And I also did see that LaDainian Tomlinson will play a role in helping find a new coach for us.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that. I like that. I am excited about that. Yes,
Yes.
for
And
sure. We
that was confirmed by Jeremiah Donati. So
okay.
that's
Okay.
some factual stuff right there.
That's pretty good. So now we really might have to get a fly and put it on the wall to like hear what that conversation is. Because I think that's a good move, man. I think you got a former Hall of Famer, like you got a Hall of Famer, not even former TCU, like Hall of Famer, having a say so in who's going to lead the charge. I think that might start a trend if it hasn't already. That might start a trend.
No, for sure. But there's some, interesting things coming up. We'll obviously touch on it more on our future episodes. We will be back in a few days to be previewing the TCU versus Baylor game. TCU plays number 16 Baylor next Saturday in its second home game in more than a month, I'm pretty sure. Haven't had a lot of home games lately. We had them all in the
Yeah.
first half of the season. But we'll be back on Thursday to talk about that game, talk about what we think's gonna happen. But for now, leave us questions or comments that you guys have on Twitter. I'm gonna be out there asking for some questions come before our next episode. But for now, thanks for tuning in to Believe in TCU Football, and we'll see you on Thursday.